Welcome one, welcome all to this completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. That's plucky Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm promiscuous Pat Contry. I don't know. I just quick P name that I'll come up with.
Anyway, all right.
What are we talking about on this show? I was talking about G2A back in the news. Gamer girl bathwater, kill me. Terminator NES footage released, the alternate version. Super Nintendo World ride layouts, maybe. Tim Atwood coming back into the news. Our buddy Tim Atwood. And Q&A. Ian.
Yeah.
You went to the zoo yesterday. You relaxed?
Yeah, I went to the zoo yesterday. I was pretty relaxed. That's
night zoo.
I think that's 7 visits in 8 weeks. Something like that. I've gone like once a week for.
So you're obsessed now.
Past. You know, it's a relaxing place. When I need to calm down, I go to the zoo. I walk around. I look at the koalas and.
How's Sam the fishing cat doing?
Didn't see him yesterday.
He wasn't out, or
no, didn't. He wasn't out.
Yeah, he's a wily one. He's got camouflage.
He's all over the place. So yeah, I didn't see him.
So night zoo is great because they have like you can drink, you can they have events. Special events they have like
there's like the, little the musical and...
at the end the musical train going on with, yeah. with the whole African motif. It's nice. The giant lion puppet thing is great. Love the zoo. We love the zoo. Real quick, Ian, Comic-Con's coming up in a week and 2 days already.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's wacky stuff.
It's freaking nuts. Everything is coming up so fast for this summer.
Year's half over already. Pat's half year closer to death. I'll be a part of the AVGN Comic-Con panel Saturday. That's Saturday at 5 p.m. I'm not sure who listening to this has Comic-Con tickets, probably a small percentage. But come on out. I'll be moderating the panel. Happy that James finally got a panel. It's long overdue. It's already been 5 years since the AVGN movie premiered at Comic-Con. That nutty event. Wow, it's 2014. So come on out to that. Certain Super Nintendo guidebook. You can still pre-order it, obviously. I want to lock down the names that go inside. This is the special edition. That's the great one. Excuse me, this is the NES one. I'm an idiot. But for the Super Nintendo one, I'm trying to lock down the names for the back of the book. So I'm going to probably lock that down later in the week and cut that off to let you know. So get your pre-order in if you want to see your name emblazoned in ink there. That's an Ultimate NES.com or UltimateSNES.com. I don't know. I registered like 20 of them. Dr. Mario World.
Yeah.
Released a day early. Didn't that happen with one of the other apps that came out a day early? They're like, fuck it.
Yeah, it might have. I just know my friend Jessica texted me this morning and it was like 7:30 my time and I didn't have the thing on, but I rolled over, I picked it up and she was like, it's out. It's fun. You should try giving it a play. So I did. And I've got it. This is adjusted. And it's good. I enjoy it. It's simple. I like that you can throw multiple pills up in the water. I like the floating. I like that after they break up, you can move them again.
Yeah.
I'm only in the first world, so I've done like the first like 5 or 6 levels. So nothing, nothing particularly tricky yet, but you can see how they work in. Like you see how early on how they can work in chaining puzzles and stuff like that.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean,
it's a tutorial world, basically.
Yeah.
Like if you can't defeat those with the minimum amount of pills, something's wrong.
You shouldn't be playing.
You shouldn't be playing?
You shouldn't be playing.
You're not a real gamer?
I mean, no, it's very, very, very,
it's very,
very straightforward.
Like I said, I love Dr. Mario. It's probably my favorite puzzle game, if I have a favorite puzzle game. I like a lot more in Tetris. I think this is going to make $1 jillion. This looks really fun.
Yeah.
So far. We'll just see if Pat gets roped into the spending more money to unlock time with the hearts or whatever it is. We'll see, or diamonds, or the hell it is.
Diamonds.
We'll see if I get roped into that. Probably not. That's where I probably will draw the line. Can I pay $10? Just let me pay $10 or $20, and that's all.
That doesn't make the most money.
I know. Well, they learned that with Super Mario Run. You know, there. I think it's okay so far. We'll see as we get closer. But the multiplayer will probably be where it really.
Yeah, I think the multiplayer will be neat.
There. So I played a modern game, Ian. There you go. Mobile counts. It still counts. NBA free agency. I know this isn't a sports podcast, but holy crap.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
The NBA is the best league because it's wide open. The stars control the league. They hate each other. They post on social media. They have rivalries that are out in the open. And it's fun. And they have all different, you know, personality types. It's great. And so there's been upheaval in the entire NBA. A lot of the teams have been totally reshuffled. I think I heard yesterday that one-third of the NBA starters are on different teams this next year. One-third.
I mean, that seems about... I mean, that wouldn't surprise
that's,
me.
Pat math, that's like almost two players per team is not on that same team as a star next year. So every team almost is getting radically reshuffled. So Kevin Durant is injured, but he goes with Kyrie Irving to the Nets. From the Nets, you have D'Angelo Russell come to the Warriors. Obviously, the biggest news, you had AD join up with LeBron with the Lakers, and everyone said, oh, Kawhi's going to go to the Lakers. And Kawhi's like, I'm coming back home, kind of. He lives in Riverside originally, but he's going to the Clippers. And then, oh, yeah, they traded for Paul George from Oklahoma City, and now they're going to trade probably what's his face from OKC is going to leave as well and probably go to Miami. Where in Miami, they just acquired Jimmy Butler from Philadelphia.
I think the Clippers have a chance of being halfway decent this year.
Halfway decent?
Yeah.
They're favorites, to win now, according to Aegis. Halfway decent?
Yeah, I don't like to overstate things.
I like Kawhi. I like him a lot because he's very humble and he's a weirdo. We need a person like that in the NBA. And he's a LeBron killer, so of course I like him. So the Clippers are going to be the dominant L.A. franchise potentially for basketball, which never happened. And in Brooklyn, the Knicks are still a freaking mess. The Knicks got nothing. The Knicks almost signed me, but I turned them down. I mean, that's how desperate they were. I can run point, Ian. I can run point.
People thought this might have been the offseason that was going to be good for the Knicks.
Oh, the Knicks are going to get Zion. They're going to get Durant and Kyrie, and they're going to go to the finals. Nope, they got nothing. They got nothing. They didn't get one grade A star.
A big bag of shit.
They got nothing. They got cap space, number 35 cap space. They signed. What a disaster! I can't. I like to watch the Knicks. They're my team growing up. I would love to watch the Knicks, but I can't.
I wish I could get behind the Clippers because they're the Buffalo Braves. But
Oh, really? They're the Buffalo Braves?
Yeah.
Then they were the San Diego team. So that makes sense.
I just have no real.
Should I bandwagon on the Clippers this year?
I have no real interest in LA sports. Most California sports teams too, I just don't care for. I do like the Padres, but that's about it.
So then of course the Warriors, they'll be in the mix too. We'll see what happens with them. Clay will probably come back in January, February from his ACL. Poor Clay Thompson. Who doesn't like Clay there? And your Toronto now looks like they're gonna probably struggle to make the playoffs without Kawhi.
I mean, Detroit's my team, but
Detroit?
Detroit's always been my team, but I like Toronto.
Detroit might be decent.
In the
Well, the West is a murderer's row. West has like 12 good teams. The East is probably, you know, you can get in there on the bottom there. All right, Ian, do you want to snap on a anabolic frolic on your laptop so I talk about Spider-Man Far From Home? No spoilers while Ian gets it. He's trying to and put it on. Just give me a thumbs up when I can go spoilers. Oh, so I saw Spider-Man Far From Home on early on 4th of July. Actually, I got tickets. And what was interesting about this one, Ian, is that I had less interest seeing this movie than probably any other Spider-Man movie that come out. This is the seventh Spider-Man movie.
I'm aware.
Tobey Maguire. I was not impressed by the trailers or the advertising at all on it. But thankfully, Ian, this was one of the movies, or like with Endgame, where 90% of the stuff in the trailer for Far From Home is like the first half of the movie. So, good. Ian's listening to Anabolic Frolic. So, what was interesting about Far From Home was that I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought it would because I thought the marketing was trash. But that saved the surprises. So, one of the key things about Far From Home going into it is that, you know, Mysterio is a main character and they've been pushing him in the marketing as a hero. But can you lower that a little bit? Even I can hear it. Okay. So But Mysterio is a classic Spider-Man villain. So you know he's going to become a villain. But the marketing's kept it a secret so that there's a twist halfway through the film, two-thirds through the film almost, that, oh my God, Mysterio, this guy's a bad guy. He's been using Peter. Which you don't get surprised at, but it's good how they pull it off. They pull off the twist. But what they didn't, what was clever about it, though, is that they worked in that he was a Stark employee, and they referenced other Stark employees from the original Iron Man, where Jeff Bridges yells at him, Tony Stark built this in a cave out of scraps. So the guy getting yelled at shows up as part of his crew to help out Mysterio. And then also, you find out that Mysterio actually developed the barf technology, like the holographic memory imagery stuff from the beginning of Civil War, and that he was a disgruntled employee because he didn't feel Stark was giving credit, and he fired him. So what's interesting, at the crux of this isn't world domination. It's not the villains aren't trying to create a giant fucking Deus Ex Machina thing in the sky to open a wormhole and destroy us all. They're just disgruntled employees that hate Tony Stark and Stark Enterprise for screwing them over. So they want to enact their revenge. They feel like they're the ones that should control the, you know, world peace going forward, and they should get what they deserve. So that was a very interesting, smart, technical piece to the writing, I thought, was working in past movies without making it too over the top. And the action was great in the last half. You saw Spider-Man pull out all the stops and do what he does with the acrobatics and being smart. Now, of course, I don't like the over-reliance on Stark technology. There was still a decent amount of that. That's actually one of the main plot devices, is that Mysterio's holograms technology are built upon drones, and then he wants control of the rest of drones in the satellite from Stark in order to enact the gigantic one in London. So it was clever. I didn't mind that part of it. And Spider-Man himself seemed to grow as a character and become an adult. The stuff that, you know, the play with all the high schoolers, I thought was fun. Of course, they have to keep them all together, so they're all the Mary Jane and then Flash and then Ned, they all went in what's called the blip. They were gone for 5 years because they don't age at all. You know, they come back, so they have to do that, obviously. And Betty Brand, of course. I like this movie a lot. This could have been the, out of these seven movies, I think it's the second best Spider-Man movie we've seen after the original Spider-Man 2. Not the Amazing Spider-Man 2, that had issues, but Spider-Man 2. The only thing I don't like is that it seems like they started with Peter acting more like an adult in Civil War during that battle. He had all the quips. He wasn't afraid of Falcon and Winter Soldier. He easily beat them both, which was proper in terms of how powerful Spider-Man is. You know, he helped take down Giant Man, or Ant-Man as Giant Man, and he held his own with Captain America. Look, that was all fine. It seemed, though, then when they got to Homecoming, he was scared of the Vulture. He was scared of Michael Keaton. And I'm not saying a character can't be scared, but he shouldn't have showed it overtly. He should have been like false confidence and bravado. And now I'm getting really nitpicky. In Far From Home, Spider-Man has almost no quips. He doesn't act like an adult at all in terms of his decision-making. He does some dumb things. One of the main plot points is a really stupid decision to hand the drone technology over to Mysterio. So that's where I'm kind of not impressed by this, like, de-evolution of Peter's character in order to space it out into probably three movies. That said, though, I still like the movie, regardless of my disdain for how they portray Peter in these movies. I think it's weird, though, that Aunt May roots for Peter to go into harm's way, especially after Aunt May lost Uncle Ben, and that hasn't even been touched upon in these two movies at all, with the guilt. And Aunt May knowing that Peter Spider-Man should only compound Peter's guilt because he's the one that indirectly caused Uncle Ben's death. And yes, in this MCU, that did happen. We just haven't been overtly told it has, even though there's been hints in Civil War that's what happened. So it doesn't make any sense in that account that he should be really bothered that Aunt May knows that he's Spider-Man, and Aunt May should be annoyed. I think her nephew could be putting himself in harm's way, but she's rooting for it. So that bothers me. Obviously, you can't talk about this movie without what could be the greatest mid-credit sequence of any of these MCU movies. Mysterio puts out fake news makes a video that Spider-Man caused all this ruckus, that he's one behind it all, and reveals Peter's identity to the world in Times Square. It's one of those oh my god moments, especially since Marvel had the balls to recast J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. People were saying, is he going to be in the movie? What's going on? It's hard to recast J.K. Simmons because he was the embodiment of J. Jonah, for sure. So what was brilliant, though, is that they didn't make him, you know, the Daily Bugle newspaper editor. He's now running the DailyBugle.net, which comes off as like an InfoWars type of Alex Jones site, you know, conspiracy theory stuff, and that's who now J. Jonah is in the MCU. It's brilliant. It's a way to get J.K. Simmons back into the character while not, you know, retreading the same exact ground. So again, I like this movie a lot. I probably would give it like an 8 out of 10, maybe 8.5. And I'm really hoping that Spider-Man 3 is focused around Manhattan, not in Europe somewhere, and that they stay in Manhattan without, they don't need to incorporate all these other Avenger. You don't need Nick Fury. You don't need Tony Stark. Spider-Man and his rogues gallery of villains could stand on their own, and they can, you know, they can use New York City as a playground with Kraven hunting, for example, and whatnot, while Ian gets a phone call there. So there you go. That's my review. 8 out of 10, 3 or 3.5 stars out of 4. And then Ian, we're ready to go. To move on with the podcast. So, Ian, we haven't spoken a lot about G2A in the past. G2A is a website based out of Russia that sells Steam codes.
Yep.
Digital codes.
For stupidly low discounts.
And so, in the past, you've seen some YouTubers be sponsored by them. PewDiePie, I don't know if they still run it. PewDiePie used to have the ad in there.
Yeah, he used to.
He used to run the ad for them. So G2A has been controversial, though, in the past, because it's not always clear how they acquire all these keys to these games.
Yeah, a lot of it seems to be done through shadier methods. One common one is that keys are bought up. And then the people who buy the keys do a chargeback and then sell all the keys to G2A.
So they're basically getting, you know, free money.
Yeah, basically, yes, exactly. They're getting free money.
Or I've heard that there's a lot of credit card fraud. When they steal credit card numbers, they use that as well. And so then when they cancel the charges, the keys are gone. They're already bought.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. The chargebacks. They buy a lot of keys and then they do a chargeback on the credit card so they get their money back.
That's different than credit card fraud. Like, if you stole my number, you bought the keys, I cancel my credit card.
There you go.
That's the other means that I've seen as well. And there's phishing scams as well all the time to get credit card information for Steam codes and whatnot. And that, to me, would be the cleanest way to do it, because then the money's out of your hands. G2A is giving you cash for your keys. It's like, oh, and they're making money off it, you know. So, so they've been accused of fraud in the past, and now they're coming up more in social media, because the problem with G2A is that either customers don't realize or care where that money is going to. The money that you, when you buy a game on G2A, buy a code, the money's not going to the game publisher. It's not going to the independent game publisher.
Right.
It's going just to G2A. It's lost money. Especially, like you said, like the money, if it gets charged back, then the original publisher loses that money. The codes went out for free. The codes are lost. They're in the void, and maybe there's not a way to clear them. I don't know, but it could be a lot of keys. So there's been sniping back and forth on Twitter between G2A and indie devs, which I thought was amusing.
Yeah. Raimi, I believe his name is Raimi Ishmael, actually tweeted out, you know, if you were going to buy one of our games through G2A, you know, he suggested just pirate it. Don't pay them anything, because the money doesn't go to them.
They lost it anyway.
Right. So, you know, just pirate it. You might as well go and get it for free. We'd rather you did that than pay G2A. And, I mean, not a developer. I'm not in the business. But I understand that sentiment. If you're not going to make money any other way, you might as well not make money in the way that's not going to benefit someone else.
Sure. So now that this has come up in the news, again, it's fresh. Oh, it's Polish owned. It's not Russia owned. It's Polish owned. Okay, I don't know if their servers are in Russia. It's a Hong Kong based company. It's offering to open its catalog of game keys to an independent auditor in an attempt to keep stolen keys from being sold through its marketplace. Quote, a little late, huh?
We will pay developers 10 times the money they lost on chargebacks after their illegally obtained keys were sold on G2A, the company said. The idea is simple. Developers just need to prove such a thing actually happened. These people have some real fucking cojones.
They need to prove it?
Yeah.
How do you think you're getting, like, probably dozens of keys at a time from these people?
Right.
How do you think this is happening?
Well, I mean, they
know. Legitimately? You think someone's legitimately buying keys at 100% value and then selling them for less? Ian, that'd be like if I went to GameStop.
Mm-hmm.
What if someone came in from GameStop every other day with like 40 copies? What if they came into your store with 40 copies of a new game that just came out and they said, give me credit, and you got to give them like half credit? Would you think they were obtained legitimately?
No.
At that point? No.
No.
Because they're literally giving away money. Because how do they get those games? Pay $60, now you're giving them $30 in credit. It doesn't make any sense.
You know a game is stolen when it still has the shrink wrap on it, and they're slippery. They're smooth. They don't stack properly. Everything is new and fresh.
So G2A is getting slippery codes.
Yes, they are getting slippery codes.
They're not asking questions about where this is coming from. No. It's the old, I got a brand new TV I can give you for $100 off the truck. You know it's not legitimate, but you don't care. And that's basically what G2A is. They're the fell off the truck company for buying games. And customers may not care because they're getting whatever, $15 games for $4 or whatever, a $60 game code for, I don't know, 20 or 30. I don't know what percentage they charge less.
That's about right. I mean,
they undercut that much?
I think some of the marketplaces, actually, it's people who can set their own price. Basically, they sell the codes.
Gotcha. It's like a StubHub sort of thing where you set your own price. Except StubHub, you get tickets legally.
And looking around, it looks like, you know, there were, there was some slight fluctuation or variations in the price of codes to try to keep things competitive. But it also looks to me on G2A like things have kind of settled into a, there's a business as usual sort of thing going on where at this point it looks like a lot of these are being priced almost exactly the same because that's just, this is how we do it.
Sure.
It's a $60 game. Okay, we'll sell the code for $20, and most people are selling it for $20.
Sure. And again, those codes that G2A is buying up, they're not asking questions, of course. It doesn't make any sense that someone, unless you have a bunch of review codes, there's no way you can get all these different codes and pay full price and then take less money out. It doesn't make any sense.
You can just read the sarcasm and the snark dripping off of these quotes from them. To assure honesty and transparency, we will ask a reputable and independent auditing company to make an unbiased examination of both sides, the developer's store and G2A marketplace. The auditing company will check if any game keys sold on G2A were obtained using stolen credit cards on developer's store, compliant with card scheme rules from Visa and MasterCard payment provider rules. They're essentially daring people to come forward, is what I think it is. And it seems like a very bad and...
It's bad faith?
I think it's bad faith.
I know it, but they'd be like, okay, now come and play our game,
right,
so to speak, to draw it out.
Exactly. And when you read this stuff, it's hard to take them at their word on anything that involves honesty at this point, because this was just posted yesterday. G2A was sending out a pre-written article to various news sites and offering to apparently pay websites to post the article as if it was written by one of their own staff members. So basically, G2A is asking a site like, say, Kotaku to post a pre-written article defending G2A, written by G2A, but posted to their site without any mention of it being G2A.
This is what they sent out to some game journalists. My name is Adrian. I represent a global digital marketplace called G2A.com. Our company is one of the biggest and most popular trading platforms in the world. It is a place where buyers and sellers of games and other digital physical goods meet to make transactions. I am contacting you because I think your website matches our interests perfectly, and we would like to find out more about publishing and advertising opportunities that you can offer. At the moment, we are trying to improve our brand awareness and public image. That's in bold, especially among the indie and smaller game developers. Unfortunately, the majority of public does not understand either our business model or how we try to make sure our customers can safely purchase digital products. We want to make sure people understand we do everything we can to support gaming community, not this first language probably, and that we introduce every possible method to assure every side is satisfied. We have written an unbiased article about how selling stolen keys on gaming marketplaces is pretty much impossible. Pretty much impossible.
They wrote an unbiased article.
And we want to publish it on your website without being marked as sponsored or marked as associated with G2A. It is a transparent and just review of the problem of the stolen keys reselling. I don't know, that doesn't make any sense. Below, I attach an excerpt of the article. If you want the full article, just let me know. Oh my fucking lord. This is almost like a Hard Times article.
Yeah.
Right? This is like an onion
drive.
A hard drive, yeah. Hard drive.
Yeah,
this is because the people that are getting now, the company that has made a ton of money off of allegedly stolen or chargebacked codes now want to put out their own unbiased somehow marketing article saying, oh, you can't sell, buy and sell stolen stuff on our website.
But it's not even that they want to put it out. It's that they want other people to put it out as their own work unrelated to GTA.
This is like jump off the roof unethical level to begin
with.
And it's probably illegal in some countries due to their trade laws, where if you are paid, you have to disclose you are paid to promote something. This is a promotion. This is a paid promotion of a company that they want people not to disclose they're being paid for. This is like the highest scummery possible. The highest. I want to sing a hymn about this, like I'm back in Catholic school. Oh, scumbags. Could be the scumbag star of the week. G2A, the word before, but because of this.
So, with some luck, you can probably sell one or two, even 10 keys on GTA or G2A without triggering any other security measures. And then one of their excuses is you have to provide with your bank account. You have to provide your bank account info, which would apparently make you too easy to target from the by the police.
Oh my god!
They're just pulling shit out of their. So this is from the Kotaku article. After what I just said, it then makes an incredible leap to drive the point home. It's like walking into a police station and pointing a gun at the officers there, okay? You got in, but will you get out of there alive? And then whoever from G2A wrote this article argued, is why selling stolen keys on the marketplace is impossible.
Wow.
Because you have to provide some info which would make you easy to track down by the police. So, no way you could be selling stolen keys. Everything's on the up and up.
Oh my god. G2A responded again.
Oh, the email.
These emails were sent by our employee without authorization, for which we apologize to Indie Games Plus and the 9 other media outlets he sent this proposal to. He will face strict consequences, as this is absolutely unacceptable. So they're either trolling, or now they got caught, they're trying to backpedal. G2A.
I think they're trying to backpedal. There's nothing. Because
they have no. I guess the ethics in Eastern Europe are different than here. Maybe they figured over there, their media outlets there, they wouldn't care getting paid to shill false information. This is insane.
Yeah. It's absurd. So.
This is fucking insane. Is PewDiePie still promoting this shit? This G2A stuff?
I don't think so. But if he is, whatever. Not smart.
YouTubers walk away from G2A sponsorship revenue. That was an article from a couple years ago.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that
people now realize what's going on.
I was fairly certain YouTubers walked away from all that a few years ago when the big story came out and publishers and whatnot were explaining how this was done.
But they're not getting any money for this, for these keys on the front end,
right,
or back end.
Exactly. So, there it is.
Wow, okay. So G2A, I guess they are the scumbag
Seller
of probably could be the decade. Decade. All right. Ian, we don't talk a lot about gamer girls on the podcast. But this is something that is everyone's talking about this. It's the new hotness, I guess.
Belle Delphine sells gamer girl bathwater to thirsty folks and is getting explicit requests. So basically, Belle Delphine is an Instagram model, a cosplayer. I'm sure she probably does some Twitch stuff.
Four million. I had to do my research. 4 million on Instagram, Ian.
She's a 19-year-old and has been selling bathwater in jars for $30 a pop.
She's British? She's British. Okay. Yeah.
Which, of course, got the internet all talking and all agog. You know, lots of mean things, lots of good things being said both ways. Honestly, my take on it is if you can make that money, make the money.
Let's back this up. So she had sold at $30 a pop 500 jars as of July 4th. And I guarantee you after this, she's going to make more of this. So bottling water. Of the, I guess, bath water. Maybe it's real bath water or not. You know, I guess she takes a bath and then she, I don't know, she gets helpers to put them in. It's a lot. The bottle 500 take a lot of time. And then she has a nice little label on the top. Says Gamer Girl Bath Water with the game pad on it. It's in pink and pastel colors. And ships them out to probably mostly guys out there. She commented to the Metro, "So there's a joke in the community among gamers that where they will comment on a post saying, 'Let me drink your bathwater.'" And that's I've seen that for 20 years. People say
Not just gamers. Yeah, it's just gamers. Yeah.
And although it's a joke, I just kind of found the idea of turning it into reality and actually letting people own my bathwater funny. All right. Bell, that's not probably your real name. You didn't find it funny. You saw dollar signs. And I'm not faulting you for that
right
here. You realize people actually would do this. The last 2 days of the website has been open. I've sold over 500 bottles of bathwater. What am I doing with these fucking books, Ian? And as of now, I've had to stop as I can't actually take enough baths and it's sold out. Take more baths, hon. Work it. Work the system.
Yeah.
I'll take a bath for you. Give me a cut. If you can sell 10,000 bottles at $30 a pop, that cost you probably $1.50 total in terms of monetary, terms of the container and water. $1.50 could be generous for a jar. So now she had tons of followers before this. But now this is great for her because now everyone knows about her. I didn't know who this was before.
I had no idea.
And now she's going to get so many new followers. They're going to watch her on Twitch or what have you. They're going to pull off a lot more before. And then, oh, what was this? She did a bait and switch before. Said she'd be stroking
two big cocks on Pornhub.
And they were
roosters.
They were roosters. Technically correct.
Yep.
She's savvy. I give her that. The Pornhub team even commented on the picture of Belle advertising the new product, asking, "How much for toenails?" Those wily. I like Pornhub folks. They're funny. They got good spirit. So we have someone who's an entrepreneur and business person who has a Patreon with 4,000 people. I looked it up. She puts out pictures of herself, barely legal for Instagram pictures. You know, thong stuff, tape on her nipples. She knows the market. She knows what she's selling. She knows who's buying. She's smart when it comes to this. So I'm not shocked that this is occurring, that people are doing this. And there's probably some guys out there that are doing it for the meme, where it's like, oh, I'm buying worthless water for $30. You're an idiot for still doing it. Joke's on you. You bought what could not even be maybe her bath water for $30. It could be runoff from her washing her dishes. Who knows?
Could be tap water.
Could be tap water.
Let's be real. It could be just tap water.
Maybe she sprinkles, I don't know, some glitter in it. I don't know what she's doing to this. I'm not going to analyze any. I'm sure there's YouTubers that are putting out unboxings of this by now for the lulz. And I'm sure there's guys out here that really find a fascination with her that want to just feel like, oh, I feel closer to her. And so I'm going to buy her bathwater as a means of being emotionally attached to someone who's using me as a wallet. You know, that's naturally, I can't be angry at her at all. I'm not angry at her because she's preying upon people that are either lonely and looking for some connection to a female online, or someone that are just doing it for a laugh and giving someone $30 for free and just saying, oh, take my money, this is so dumb and shitty, like the Szechuan sauce thing from Rick and Morty. It's just a meme, you know, a thing that you're doing. So yeah, Don't blame the business. Blame the market.
Don't hate the player.
Don't hate the if she
hate the game.
If she knows there's these lovable losers out there that are that desperate for a female connection that are going to be paying $30 for bathwater, can't falter.
I feel like there's a large majority of people who said to themselves when they saw this guy and girl, "Hey, if I could do that, I'd do it.
If I could do it right now,
I
would
do it.
If I
could do it right now, I would go home, take a bath, and start shipping out bottles." And anyone who says otherwise is kind
of... Who wants strands of Pat's hair in a jar?
Ooh.
You like my luscious locks? I'll sell some of Pat's hair. How about that for $20 a strand? I would probably get a few people out there that might want to do it. We'll do it. Yeah. So now that she's in the news, she's going to capitalize on this more. And like I said, good for her. You know, whatever. She knows the market out there. Hell, if I had her body, I'd do the same thing. Who am I kidding? You know, I don't have it going on. I don't have her looks.
God, can Piers Morgan just fuck off forever?
Why?
Sorry, at the bottom of this article, there's a link to a Piers Morgan thing. I just fucking hate that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, he didn't comment on it?
No. Oh. He did a comment on Meghan Markle or whatever, but I just hate seeing Piers Morgan's fucking face anywhere.
He just complained about the U.S. national team and said, oh, our Linuses are going to beat them. Nope, that didn't happen, Piers. U.S. women won.
What a fucking...
I just thought he would have... This is something he would comment on. This is in Piers Morgan's wheelhouse.
Yeah, meanwhile, he's got a fucking drum of it and he jerks with it. But
is he on TV anymore? Or he just says shit on Twitter.
No, he's. I think he's. I don't know. I hope he falls off the face of the planet. Continuing.
Okay, so that's really it when it comes to Belle Delphine. I'm sure she's going to come out with more stuff. There was a fake about someone putting out Gamer Girl P, though that was a troll thing. It didn't actually happen. But I wouldn't be shocked if someone requested that, to be honest.
Oh, she said in the article that there were people who requested that she pee in the water.
That probably gets
whatever.
Into the illegality part. It's probably you can't ship something that'd be technically toxic.
Yeah.
You know, bathwater, I wouldn't recommend someone... didn't I see the news that someone drank the water and went to the hospital? Was that true or not?
No.
That wasn't true?
It was easily disproven on Snopes.
Okay,
the Snopes story came out like the day before, and then the next day someone's like, I got herpes from drinking the bathwater.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see about herpes. I saw about someone going to the hospital.
Snopes was like, uh-uh.
To her credit, she said not for drinking. FDA's going to come down on her. Oh, there it is, Snopes. Did people contract herpes after drinking Instagram star Belle Delphine's bathwater?
And if they fucking did, that's on them.
Well, no, that's not on them. You can't be putting out herpes water.
You shouldn't be drinking bath water.
Well, you can't be marketing STD water either, Ian. That would be illegal, I think. I think the FDA would come after you for doing that.
It'd be like getting food poisoning.
You can't say, oh, here's my AIDS blood. You can't market that to people. You know?
Just saying.
Wasn't there an album that... Test my LP album. Was there an album put out with members of the band's blood inside the clear LP? Someone told me about this. That someone did that. There was like a limit to 30. There were blood LPs that were clear.
My knowledge, however.
I've heard of this.
There was, let's see, blood and LPs.
So this has sort of happened before to this extent.
Blood and records.
Oh, Flaming Lips, blood vinyl, 10 copies.
There it is, yeah.
So there was literally, it's a clear LP album with blood inside. They happened. There you go. They did 10 of them. That's fucking disgusting.
I have some of their records, not with blood in them.
Okay, well, if you did, Ian, you could sell them for a lot on the open marketplace. All right. Oh, good for you, Belle Delphine. Maybe we'll run into you at a convention, but probably not. With the unwashed masses. All right, Ian.
Yes.
You know there was a Terminator game for the NES that came out. Not that good. I think only 2 stars according to a certain NES guidebook, or 1.5 stars. But that was not supposed to be the original Terminator game. It was supposed to be one that came out before that.
Yeah, and it was turned into Journey to Silius.
Journey to Silius
by Sunsoft. But
by Sunsoft, the name that you can trust.
Yes.
Well, according to their marketing.
I mean, you kind of could back then. You could trust Sunsoft. They did good stuff.
So Journey to Silius came out on the Famicom originally in 1990 called Rough World. That's a funny name for a game, Rough World. When it came out in the U.S., it was called Journey to Silius. So, it's an action platformer. You get different guns. It's a fairly difficult game. Most Sunsoft games are fairly difficult.
It's difficult. It's fun. It's got great music.
Great music.
Which is a trademark of most Sunsoft games from that era.
So what happened, though, originally, that was supposed to be a Terminator game originally. Originally, Sunsoft had the license for it to be a Terminator game. And we have never seen really gameplay footage of it in its Terminator motif before that. But now it's been revealed. We found the Terminator promo tape from CES back in 1989, the Las Vegas WCES, that'd be West CES, because originally there was one in Vegas and one in Chicago, then they just combined them all. So they unveiled the Terminator in this little promo video touting how Sunsoft rules, you know, come after us. They showed off well, they're basically saying we're the name of the game. I've seen other like Sunsoft promo videos like this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're the name that matters. You know, great graphics and sound and the light. This is the movie come to life. You know, it's the same bullshit to sell a video game that's 8-bit.
Our games are delectable.
They were saying stuff in this. They showed scenes from the movie, but they're trying to say, like, oh, this is the movie come to life. And it's really just cut scenes. They're showing off cut scenes from the movie and saying, this is the movie come to life.
That's what the game is going to be. But then they showed the intro stage, or the intro screen, and cut scenes, like in-game cut scenes. A little bit of running,
yeah, like a 3D top secret episode maze,
yeah,
that you're going through here. They showed the Terminator holding a gun. It shows you dying. So I don't know at that point if that was going to be not a 2D game or a third person game, because from the visuals there, it's not clear at that point what type of game it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, because then it shows you another like cutscene. Sarah, where are you? It shows you running. It says you're hit bad. And there's a skull that's like, so. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure at this point. Did it start off as one thing? Then did it slowly become another thing?
Yeah, like almost like an adventure title.
And then the license got ripped away. It looks like it started off as one type of game and went through some changes while it was within the, while it had the Terminator license, and then when the license was ripped away, we got Silius. It's weird because, you can't tell what that's supposed to be, but it doesn't look like a side-scrolling action platformer.
This comes from Gaming Alexandria. Terminator, why so Silius is the name of the article. So it seems like, according to this article, this game had not been in development for very long, and the promo videos only featured the game's title scene, screen, and some cutscenes. Okay, so those are some cutscenes. It wouldn't be an adventure game. But it looks like to me that's not all cutscenes, though. It almost looks like that's like a deviation path, maybe, for you to get killed by the Terminator. Anyway, I was sent a tape with Sunsoft promo videos from the show, and here it is, the only surviving video footage of Sunsoft's Terminator for the NES, when it's really just, maybe a proof of concept.
Right.
And then they say, oh, we're the title holder at marketing. They show the image of the kid holding the zapper in the chair in the tropics, which I've seen that picture before. I've seen that in comic books. I remember seeing that advertising in the 80s and 90s for video games was the best. I probably don't do it anymore. They tout that, oh, Spy Hunter, Xenophobe, Platoon, and the Turner. Then they show some awful concept art afterwards.
Oh, the concept art is freaking fantastic.
It's like 12-year-old level concept art.
If you go to Gaming Alexandria, you can see the pencil version of the Terminator, which is just fantastic.
I'm not trying to poke fun at the artists back then. I'm sure they do a great job, but this is something that like your talented Fred in fifth grade could have done.
Right, exactly.
I'm not even making that up. It's not like professional. It's not horrible. It's someone that shows talent, because the picture of the Terminator has like bulbous cheekbones on it.
Really, really wide shoulders too. Insanely wide shoulders.
Really, the high cheekbones was bothering me about that picture there. Yeah, and then they tout the platoon. Like, that was a great idea for an NES game. They go back to a cutscene and then the Terminator by Sunsoft. So. I guess what could have been, right?
Yeah.
If Sunsoft did the Terminator game, it would have been a lot better than who did the Terminator game. Let's look at my app here. Is my app on here?
I don't know who did it. Terminator.
Let's see who can find it first.
It was published by... now everything that comes up when I type Terminator NES is the Sunsoft.
Mindscape published it, developed by... Radical Entertainment.
Oh, yeah, no.
They didn't do a lot of good stuff, did they?
No, they did not.
1.5 stars, according to a certain NES guidebook and app.
So, yeah, if they had, it would have been great because they could have said they did you know, basically two of the best movie license based games on the Nintendo.
Batman
was really good as well.
Yeah, Batman was good. Platoon, not so much. Platoon is horrifying to play as
a
child.
Yeah, Platoon is not so good, but Batman is
horrifying.
Batman is very good.
And Fester's Quest. Well, Adam's Family ish.
I like Fester's Quest. Some people don't. I love it. It's hard to start off.
Yeah, that was a movie. Was that a movie license? No, Adam's Family was what year?
No, that was before the movie.
It's before the movie?
Yeah,
that was around the time of the movie. No,
pretty sure it was well before, but I could be wrong.
What year was Fester's Quest on the NES? Fester's Quest was
89.
Okay, yeah, the movie didn't come out until I think like 91. Okay, I know why I thought that was. Anyway,
well, because there is an Addams Family movie game.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Multiple ones. Okay, so yeah, Gaming Alexander, good for getting the scoop. Check out the website and the video from there.
So, a layout, like a big, I don't know, diorama layout, was leaked for what looks like potentially Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios in Tokyo. And so basically Nintendo is opening a theme park. I think we all mostly know that. They want to have it open in time for the Winter Olympics in 2020. So that's, I mean, honestly, that's...
Six months away? 6-7 months? Yeah, winter's in like usually February. Winter Olympics.
Oh wow, I was thinking like next year, like so that's gonna be crazy. That's gonna be soon. But the layout looks great. So the layout is done, it looks like a Super Mario 3D World level, a Super Mario Odyssey level. It's got that style to it.
Winter Olympics. Let me just see when it starts.
And it shows
Winter Olympics is 2022, not 2020.
Oh, it said something here,
We just had an Olympics. So it's 2022.
Nintendo hopes to have the park open by the start of the Tokyo Olympics in 2020.
Well, it's not 2020.
Okay, well, then that's an error on there.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, there's no way they're getting...
2020 is the Summer Olympics.
Ah, there it is. There you go.
Now I'm confused. It's every 2 years. Okay, Summer Olympics is next year, so they have about June, July.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's a lot more doable. Give a year,
it's
not
about
6 months.
Year.
Okay.
Anyway, it shows... So it's wonderfully themed... and it shows a few things that I think we kind of might have expected there to be. There's a Mario Kart ride. It looks like in the back. It looks like Bowser's Castle with his head.
Oh, that's a great idea.
His head over it. And, you know, obviously people walking through his mouth. It looks like there's a Yoshi's Adventure Land or something like that. To me, it looks like maybe like like the Alice in Wonderland ride at Disney where you sit in something and it takes you around and moves you through.
This
probably animatronics and visuals and stuff like that.
This is a Mario-themed part of the park right here.
Right, exactly. And
you
then
little,
it shows like a little cafe.
The little Yoshis running around up top. I wonder what
that's
going to be.
Saying. No, that's what I'm talking about.
Is that going to be a ride?
I think it's...
That could be a ride,
Yoshi's,
too.
I think that's the one that you sit in and it takes you around.
Oh, okay.
You get in like a car and it takes you around through dioramas and things like that. That would be my guess.
Their version of It's a Small World?
Yeah, that sort
of
thing.
And then Ian, if you want a Yoshi burger, you can go to Toastal Cafe right there if you want.
No, I don't. And then they show a Donkey Kong portion of the park. It's a separate layout and
it's probably not as big. But actually, no, it looks as big. It looks big.
So it's got Funky Kong's plane. It's got, it looks like it's going to have a minecart ride.
What would
a Donkey Kong Land be without a minecart ride? And it looks like what might be like a big waterfall feature against the back. So honestly.
Looks incredible to me.
Yeah. If the actual park looks anything like these, I'd love to go. You know, the Mario world, the Mario universe has always been extremely colorful and bright and fun themed and nice to look at. I can imagine that would be a great place to walk around and spend a day. Even if you weren't even necessarily into Mario or games, you know, it's unique and colorful looking enough that someone seeing it for their first time would probably be like, hey, that looks like fun. I want to go check that out.
Minecart Madness ride traveling all the way around the back half of the park, a recreation of Funky Kong's plan at the front, and will potentially be a stunning waterfall feature in the back. Okay, I wonder if there's going to be more than these two parts, because people are saying, well, what about Zelda? What about Link? Is there a room for that anywhere in this park? I don't know if that would be able to pull off. That's not as kid-friendly as Donkey Kong or Mario.
Donkey Kong and Mario, I think, are probably the most immediately appealing to large groups of people. The theming, like I said, between Mario and Donkey Kong, it can be looked at as, like I said, even if you're not into games, you've got your Happy, Fun, Colorful Land,
yeah,
and then you've got your Legends of the Hidden Temple inspired, sort of,
sure,
Donkey Kong Land. There are themes that I think would be interesting enough for people, regardless of their interest. Honestly, the Legend of Zelda probably would be too. But keep in mind, this is at Universal Studios in Japan, so it's not like it's going to be the size of a normal theme park. Like it's not going to be its own Disney World. It's going to be...
Yeah, put on the space.
Right, it's going to be part... It's just like the Universal Studios up here in L.A. They've got the Simpsons Land, and they've got the Harry Potter Land, but, they're well-themed, and they're large, but they're not... They're not as big as a normal park. They're still parts of a larger park experience.
Like we have the Harry Potter part of the Universal Studios over here.
Yes.
Was it Wizarding World of Harry Potter, for example. So this is going to cost, according to this article I see here in Polygon, between $351 million up to as much as $544 million. So, woo! Okay, then. Oh, yeah, we'll see one in the U.S., if not both locations. We'll definitely see one. I don't know if they only choose one. What gets more traffic, Florida or L.A.?
Probably Florida.
Probably Florida.
Yeah, probably.
Actually, I've never been to the Florida one. I've only been to the one in L.A.
I've actually never been to the one in L.A.
I've only been to the Disney in Florida, not the one an hour and a half away. It's really, how does that work out? Did the opposite of both.
I didn't want to go to Universal Studios until they redid the Jurassic Park ride, which apparently they have. So now I want to go back with. I want to go with Bonnie.
That was probably the same one that I went on.
No, they completely rethemed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Jurassic World now. So it's the same. It's the ride, but I guess they, basically refurbed everything.
Well, I mean, did they have the same rides in both Universal Studios or different ones?
Oh, don't know.
Okay. I missed out on the, I was kind of annoyed. I missed out on the, am I going to confuse MGM with Universal? Because I've been to MGM Studios. I was there right when they switched over to the Simpsons ride. They got rid of the Back to the Future ride. Mm-hmm. That's Universal, right? That was 2008. That was right when they switched over.
Yeah, that's Universal Studios.
I was like, no, but the Simpsons ride was really fun. Yeah. Really fun there. Anyway, so, so I guess after that, we'll see when it comes here. I guess we'll be probably before we're 50, we'll see it in the U.S.
Yay! I can go with my little propeller beanie and, my big lollipop and be all excited. Yay. I've been waiting for this my whole life.
Man, children, mission complete. We got it. It would probably, I would say that.
Will there be a Nintendo rep there in a booth for angry man children to yell at? Like, that's a ride. Like, wait in line to yell at a Nintendo rep.
there'll be a Pokemon Land, but they won't have every single Pokemon, so people will be upset at them.
I actually don't think there would be a Pokemon Land. I don't know if Nintendo owns a large enough stake in it.
I'm sure they could work out a deal with the Pokemon company. What, they own 30%, something like that? It's a minority stake, but I'm sure they could figure out a way to share the money, wet their beak a little bit there. All right, so so that's gonna be coming by
next summer.
Okay. All right, Ian,
Patrick,
our pal Tim Atwood. We spoke about him last week.
You're awfully comfortable with him.
What do you mean? We're like Paizan.
Paizans, brothers.
Yeah. I met him finally at. We've been emailing for 3 years. It was 3 years originally with the Tim Atwood stuff.
Yeah.
The whole saga with Nintendo Age and then banning him and, him revealing that, hey guys, I had 18 sealed statements. Now I still have 6. So now Tim revealed to me at Too Many Games, two and a half weeks ago, that he was going to sell a chunk of his collection off. And now it's up for eBay auction here. A gigantic chunk on eBay, Ian.
Yeah.
One thousands video game collection for sale. Games, guides, statue, figures, systems. $275,000. Buy it now or make an offer. Local pickup only. Oh, if I buy it, I'll earn $100 in eBay bucks. So that's good.
Oh, nice.
That's good. So he lists games, and these are all, unless otherwise stated, these are all sealed games. You know.
Yes.
Game Boy games, over 150 Game Boy games. Game Boy Color games looks like about less than 100. Game Boy Advance games, maybe about 75. Game Boy DS games, not too many. Game Boy 3DS games. NES games, about maybe 50, if you include all the doubles of like 14 Eliminator Boat Duel games. There's cases of some games there. There you go. You want a Power Punch 2 case? There you go. Five in a case.
14 copies of Eliminator Boat Duel.
Yep. All with the misspelling.
That's good.
Not too many Super Nintendo games, maybe about 30 to 40. About 25, 30, and 64 games. If you want 29 Tonic Troubles, there you go. You can get 29 of them.
I'm kind of upset that for Super Nintendo, under cases, he only has Super Pinball behind the mask, but he doesn't have an F-Zero, which is
everyone
like...
Everyone had F-Zero.
Everyone for a time had a case of F-Zero.
F-Zero, I think Caesar's Palace is one that was widely available. The million seller version of them. I didn't know. Pinball behind the mask. So then you got some GameCube games. You got about 75 of those there. Some Wii games, lots of PlayStation games, lots of PS2 games, a ton of PS2 games, hundreds it looks like, and then PS3, and then PS4, and then a lot of strategy guides, an Assassin's Creed collection. Huh, I know Tim collects Assassin's Creed stuff there. BioShock collection, statues and figures and stuff, and pops.
There's a Zelda collection, I'm pretty sure.
Elder Scrolls collection, Fallout collection, Metal Gear Solid collection.
Naughty Dog, NIS, okay. Zelda, yeah.
And then a bunch of systems.
Yep.
A bunch of systems. Now, if most of those systems are new, that's something, if that is. If that's Sports Set, NES, Action Set, NES, Challenge Set, NES, Miracle Piano, Genesis, Classic Game Boy, Classic NES, Limited Edition Game Boy, Limited. Where's my mushroom? Shit. my mushroom's not here. Dog bowl controllers, zapper, launch kits for some of these games. This is a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I have no idea how to price this, though. I mean, I just don't.
No, neither do I.
No clue how to price some of this stuff.
Honestly, if all those systems are sealed... Well, there's no, like, NES stuff in there, but there
No, there's
is...
NES sports set. It's on the bottom.
Oh, okay.
NES. Yeah. You got it there. All items are brand new unless described differently.
Other. At the very bottom of Other. Street Fighter 25th Anniversary Chess Set.
Oh, I didn't see that. NES controller 2-pack. Well, I have one. I have one that's almost sealed there. Dog bone. Yeah. All right. So here's the thing, is that this doesn't include quite all the goodies that we've known about in the past, though.
No, it doesn't include a lot of the good stuff.
So... We talked on the podcast about, I got the email from Tim, and I talked about, you know, this is some of the stuff he's owned or originally had. And we're talking about, obviously, the big one is the 6 sealed stadium events. That's not included here. You include that. All bets was off. That can go for $1 million to some people, to some crazy people. You know, Clue Land sealed. Some Black Box games sealed. Wild Gunman. I have to find the email here. Ian's dream?
That would be one, I guess. I mean, not that I would ever actually go out of my way to do it, but do like me that Clue Land. I do like me that Clue Land.
So do some pat math. If there's thousands of games here, $275,000. Let's see what the average price would be. What do you think? There's like 3,000 games there. You think about that?
Yeah,
we'll say 2,500 games, but you're not counting all the systems though and everything. Divided by, we'll say 3,000 games. It's like we'll just say $100 a game, sealed. Could be good. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no clue either.
But
this is simply what it is.
It is what it is. But this could also just be as Tim has operated in the past. You know, this is also advertisement. This is a great way to advertise it. Hey, I got all this stuff. And he might get emails from people that know that he has other stuff saying, okay, let's deal on the good stuff behind the scenes.
Let's talk about the top shelf. Yeah.
The top shelf stuff. Or maybe I throw in a couple if you spend the money for this.
I can go to the dispensary today, speaking of top shelf. Anyways.
But do you think there'd be a buyer that would paid. That would not even price was no object. Save it, or they knew they can make their money back. What type of person would spend the money on all these sealed games and systems? Is there someone out there that would do it?
I don't know. I don't. I honestly have no idea. I've never, at least as far as I like, in terms of how I think about collecting, how I would collect stuff. It always amazes me that these big lots ever move, because there's just so much stuff in there that I would say even the most passionate video game collector, they're probably only going to want 2/3 of whatever someone else has that they're selling off in a lot.
Okay.
So I don't know with certain people getting out of it, with people, you know, selling off their collections at different shows and conventions, I'm trying to think of who this would go to. Who is in the position to be the next Tim Atwood or someone like that? Is there anyone that really needs this? You
might get an investor that says, oh, these games could be worth gold, Jerry Gold, 10, 15 years from now, and puts down a lot of money if they have the money.
I think
these coin and comic guys could potentially do
that. I think that's your only real market right now. I don't think there's any actual just, I'm out here collecting video games because I love video games.
Well, not for those sealed ones, no.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think there's anyone who's just a video game collector who would buy this.
So these were the cases that Tim, 2016. These were cases that Tim, I think, originally had. I don't know how many of these are sold, but yeah. None of these are on there, though. Obviously, Stay Invents, 3 cases he had at one point. Scoon. I'll go backwards. Screw it. Zelda 2, and Zelda is not on there, right? No. Wrecking Crew, that would go for a ton of money sealed, an original one. Wild Gunman, your good old Wally Bear's on there. You got a Wally
Bear. Wait, what? He has a case of Wally Bear?
He had a case of Wally Bear at some point.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Wacky Races, that would go for a ton of money sealed. The Ultimate Games would. Urban Champion would. Again, none of these are on there. These are cases he has. So he has at least 6 of all of these at one point.
Toxic
Crusader.
I have to be honest with you. The only case that matters now is that case of Wally Bear and the No Gang.
You want that, Ian?
Yeah.
What would you pay? let's see. What's the one? Super Mario. He has a case of 1, 2, and 3. Wow.
One each.
One case each. He did at one point. I don't know if he sold them all.
Right. This is years old. We talked about this before.
Obviously, Stadium Events. He still has 6 of those that we know about. Good old Rygar. I'll buy a case of Rygar. Slalom. Look at the Black Box games here. River City Ransom. Rescue Rangers 1 and 2. Romance of Three Kingdoms 3. 2. Excuse me. 2. That's a hard to find game. And more. So like none of these are on that list. Panic Restaurant's not on that list, for example. Ninja Gaiden 1, 2, or 3 are not on that list. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out sealed. That would go for a ton of money. All the Mega Mans. So the point is this. He has some of those games still. Guaranteed. He's keeping those separate because those are the ones that you can sell individually.
Right.
So he's doing the smart thing. He's bundling up all the, we'll say, mid-level stuff.
And between when you started talking to him and now, he's also had plenty of opportunities to sell the stuff that you can sell individually too. He may be out of some of it. Who knows what he's doing first or last, but I'm sure he still has some. But when people started getting a hold of him, like with the cases of the Stadium Events, I'm sure he found homes for some of that stuff.
Oh, sure. He found homes for 12 of them that we know of, yeah.
I don't just mean Stadium Events. I mean other games.
Oh, yeah, of course. But he has so many of these that when you say I have, you know, a case of 2 cases of 10 years of 7-up spot, doubtful you sold all 12 of those by now, you know, for example.
Yeah.
Doubtful you sold all 18, excuse me, he had 2 cases of Dragon Warrior 4. Doubtful he sold all 12 of the sealed Dragon Warrior 4,
probably,
you know,
not.
4s. What are we doing with the boxes once they open them up? What do they do with the boxes? Save the boxes? You put those in plastic?
Fold it nicely, yeah.
Oh, you fold it nicely? You put it in, a protector?
Yeah.
Like that? All right, so this I'm trying to advertise for my buddy Tim here. Tim deserves a good retirement. He wants to travel around the world. You deserve that. Get rid of this stuff, Tim. Enjoy your retirement here.
Just say no to drugs, Tim. With Wally Bear.
Okay. Well, it's not just say no. It's say no.
Yes.
Can't say just say no. That's the trademarked one.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't want to get in trouble with Nancy Reagan there, Ian.
Oh, Nancy.
All right. Ian, we have a Patreon poll topic.
Tell me about the Patreon, Pat. Where do we go?
Oh, Ian, we give you stuff at the Patreon.
Okay.
Ian gives you writing.
And they give us money.
They give us money. And in return, it's the video podcast is dispensed out in a nice little like coin slot little.
You get the whole podcast.
You get all this awkwardness here. Pat, you're not good at this.
So you go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
Okay.
You'll see the things you can get in exchange for your money on about a monthly basis. You'll give us some of that money if you want, and we'll reciprocate with cool stuff and a big thanks for supporting us. Here's today's Patreon topic.
Okay. That they vote on, Ian? They vote on it.
They voted on it. You, the viewer, you, the patrons, voted on this topic.
Good. I'm learning.
So, with 25%, we have when will GameStop stop accepting PS3, 360, Wii, and Wii U game systems for trade? With 33%, we've got what would your ideal game collection consist of if price was no object? And with 42%, was it harder to produce the SNES book due to having less experience versus the NES? Pat,
is that me?
This is laser focused on you, bud.
Predator tri-target triangle on my chest.
Yep.
Triangle.
Do it.
Oh, wow. Well, am I working on a certain type of book? That's right. You can pre-order at ultimatesnes.com. I forgot about that. So
you can give him money in exchange for a future promise.
Future promise. It's a product, Ian. It's a pre-order. can't have the internet coming after me. It was harder. Absolutely. So one of the ways that I got around this was obviously I did a lot less writing myself. And I hired an editor to help and do fact-checking. And there was a lot more due diligence, I would say, on the Super Nintendo book to make sure that things were accurate and correct. And plus, I honed in on better writers that I trusted more. Not that I didn't trust the last ones. But we'll just say a couple writers didn't make the cut on the Super Nintendo book versus NES. Sorry, that's the reality. It's just how it worked out. And I hired a couple more professional writers. Christina, who had actually written professionally on a website before, game reviews, for example, did over 100 reviews. So that was, to me, the issue was that, first and foremost, is that making sure that a writer writing about a game that I had no real knowledge of was doing it correctly. So how do you do that? You hire someone else to make sure that they do it correctly. So a lot less on Pat's shoulders, thankfully, there. And I only wrote 80 reviews versus 450 as well. So, yes, and every writer is obviously playing through the games and making sure but things happen. Mistakes happen. You can say, oh, there was 5 stages instead of 6, or this power-up was not named correctly. These things happen. No book's going to be perfect. No reference guide's going to be perfect. Absolutely. But one of the biggest, I think, hardest parts of this book was maybe making sure that, like, PAL variants were named correctly, that you accommodated for things of that nature. The availabilities of the Super Nintendo games that I know a lot less about than NES games that Ian helped me out with on some of them there. Not knowing that, you know, a writer might take for granted, oh, it's a sports game, it's common. No. That could be a rare game, even if it's going for only $7 on eBay. That Andre Agassi tennis could be a lot harder to find than you think. So that was really the more technical challenges there. The articles, not really a challenge as much, and like the promo and special cards, everyone knows what those are for the most part. Pixel Dan helped me out with one of those, by the way.
Oh, did he?
The preview cartridge, not a game, the preview cartridge that ran in the kiosks.
Oh, neat.
Incredibly rare, and Dan found one at a thrift store.
So, that's pretty awesome.
So, the NES, I'll just say this, the writing was more difficult because we had to have more careful notes and back and forth the writers. The actual production, though, has been easier because I learned from the first time the pitfalls of what not to do. So I think that might have evened itself out over the 3 years the book's been worked on. 3 years? It's been 3 years almost? Jesus, I gotta cut down the times. Ian, what do you think? Game Boy Black and White next? Or N64? What do you think, Ian? I'll let you, the viewer, decide. That'll be a Patreon poll topic.
I would say...
Well, you're Genesis. Biased. Genesis?
Yeah.
That's not in the branding, Ian. I don't know, like, Ultimate Sega.
Don't care. Branch out, diversify, you're getting old.
Would you come back? Would you come back on board and do some Genesis reviews, Ian? Would you come back on board and do some...
Maybe.
That's a no. Okay, come on, Ian. Come on, Ian. Has it been... you've seen me the 3 years of doing both. Has it been less wear and tear on me for the Super Nintendo book? Or just as much? Or a little bit less? It's been less.
I don't know. I mean, you're kind of the same. You're always at like a cruise control speed of Catastrophe.
Catastrophe. Yeah. What?
You're on
cruise control of catastrophe.
You're on cruise control to catastrophe.
What catastrophe have I been cruising into?
I have no idea. I don't know. You just seem like everything's catastrophic.
It's not catastrophic. It's just it's juggling.
Yeah,
it's a lot of project managers juggling shit.
I think you should probably learn to juggle three balls before you druggle.
Before you druggle?
Before you learn to
juggle. You're on druggling.
I'm on too little sleep.
What am I juggling that's too much right now? What else am I juggling?
Nothing.
Documentary. Maybe a Pat the Anspunk video I have to edit that was shot a year ago.
What else? Jesus, I forgot about that.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe you shouldn't forget about it anymore.
No, I didn't forget about it. I've actually got to get the CG still on that and get that going. Okay, well, thanks for your question there. Speaking of polls and voting, Ross Perot passed away today. That lovable business minx, Ross Perot. It was 89 he was? I thought it was 89 back in the 90s.
I feel you nothing.
I feel nothing for Ross Perot?
I feel nothing.
That was an entertaining character.
He's old. Time. I mean, it was time for him, I guess, to go home.
So last week I was a hermit. This week I'm cruise control of catastrophe.
Yeah.
Okay, Ian, man.
You're a catastrophic hermit. All right, Pat. So on this podcast, we've got some Q&A from our listeners.
Is that how it works, Ian?
Listeners like you.
Is that how it works?
Yes, it is. It is.
Do I ask? Because it says Pat asks. Do I ask that, Ian?
Pat asks. Yes.
Okay, I do that. Do I say Pat asks or no? Pat
yes,
asks.
You do. Pat asks.
Patrick at PMT Rec House, are gamers entitled to a certain quality standard with gamer releases? Example, people being upset that not all the Pokemon are in the new Pokemon game.
Sure, there are some quality standards, I believe, that, you know, people who play games can expect. You know, it shouldn't be broken. It shouldn't be a piece of shit. You know,
it should be functional.
It should be functional.
Like your toaster oven should toast bread when you buy it.
It should be functional. And, I mean, honestly, at this point, I would hope not money grubbing. Not, you know, tons and tons
not of... Not a cash-in.
But I don't think anyone's entitled to a quality standard with video game releases when it comes to things like all the Pokemon being included in a Pokemon game. Now, like I said in the previous podcast, I do wish the National Dex was in there. I understand why people are upset. I absolutely get that. But it's not the end of the world to me. That said, no, I don't think you're entitled to have all the Pokemon in every game. If the developer decides that this is where we're stopping something, then that's fine. I mean, that's their choice. They make the game. You don't have to buy it if you don't want to. You're not magically entitled to having all the Pokemon in every single generation just because that's the way it was. Vonnie actually described it to me in a really interesting way last night, and like I said, I still miss the National Dex, but she goes, competitive card games all the time reset.
They swap out things.
They take cards out. They put things in. You know, every 3 years, basically every Magic cards, and I could be wrong. Hopefully, I'm right. But I believe Magic cards rotate out every 3 years.
Okay.
So they go away. So if you buy a starter set now, those cards will be good for 3 years of competition.
Well, they got to make money. They got to sell new cards too.
And it's how you rebalance the game and keep it popular as well.
And make money.
Yeah. I mean, that's how the Pokemon TCG works. I mean, so
it's not chess.
No, but I mean, you release enough cards, you break the game. You have to rebalance it. So that's basically, you know, that's one way to look at the new Pokemon is that they're rebalancing it. I think every person who buys a game is entitled to it working, you know, being functional and not being crap. But a lot of that is going to end up being subjective. Like, where does it stop being objective and start being subjective?
That's the whole thing. There's entitlement versus expectations, but we're talking about an entertainment product.
Yeah.
This isn't a car. When I buy a car, I'm entitled to meeting safety standards.
Right.
I'm entitled to not breaking down immediately and driving and not killing me.
Right.
That's my entitlement or expectation of buying a car. When I go to see a movie, am I entitled to the movie being good? No.
No, you're not.
It's entertainment. Someone might find it good for them. It met their expectations. It might not have met mine.
I mean, that's why I kind of stalled as soon as I started to answer the question, because, yeah, your entitlement is the game works. And then I was like, you can't say that the game is good. You can't even go that far. You can't say that it's fun or playable, no, because it's going to be totally different to everyone.
You can't return a video game because, oh, I didn't like it. It's not good. Remember we tried that with NES games? It's like, no. Well,
yeah.
Well,
yeah, too bad. You
can you return a comic book if you don't like how it ended?
No.
No. You don't like that Spider-Man didn't save the day? Okay. Deal with it. You know? Well, I don't see how we got to this point where that every person had to be satisfied by every single entertainment item. Like, I don't understand that before. Well, we didn't have Rotten Tomatoes in the 90s.
Right.
We saw a lot of shitty movies that we wasted not just our time and money on. Now, at least for entertainment, especially for movies, but well, you still had, like, in the newspaper, you looked at reviews every week. But for a video game, you have reviews come out, usually in advance of the game being released,
yeah,
saying, is this a good game? Not just one, numerous ones. You have Metacritic and things like that. You should know that you're more likely to like a game or not before it comes out nowadays.
Yep.
Based upon your expectations and how you read the reviews, it shouldn't be a shock if you buy a game and you don't like it. It's not like that was hidden from you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
You can avoid buying that product. It's capitalism. It is. The same way before I buy a TV, I'm entitled to it working and being able to the display images well and have sound. I'm not entitled to doing...
There are non-subjective standards, yes, for many things.
Yes.
When you buy food, it shouldn't be rotten.
Yes. It shouldn't kill me, the food I buy.
Entertainment, totally subjective. You're buying, in a way, I mean, this goes... You can say this. You're buying art. You're buying an idea. If you don't like the idea, yes, too fucking bad.
It's subjective art. It's mass-produced art. There, that's a good way to put it. It's mass-produced art that one person might find better than the other there. So, yeah, that's what it comes down to. Let your wallet speak to it, you know. That's about it. I think that was reasonable.
Yeah, that's about it.
If it's a mobile game that comes out, you don't have to buy that mobile game. You don't. Or maybe it'll be good. Maybe wait for the reviews to come out. Like I'm thinking of Dr. Mario World, of course. Dr. Mario World seems fun so far.
Yeah, it does. Seems all right.
It's not broken. Okay, moving on.
All right, and Pat asks,
at S.A. Jewers, would love to hear Ian's thoughts on this.
So it's River City Girls is what he wants my thoughts on. I'm not sure if it's because people know I like beat-em-ups or if it's because people know I don't like Way Forward, but that seems to be changing. So, yeah, this actually looks pretty good. It's a River City Ransom game, only you play as the girlfriends and you have to rescue the guys. It looks like...
flips it on its head.
Yeah, flips it right on its head. I think that I would definitely give this a shot. I've really started to not be so... What's the word I'm looking for? Stubborn about my dislike of Way Forward. I've really been enjoying Bloodstained. I feel like I should probably go back and try playing some of the Shantae games again. And yeah, I like River City Ransom, so I will give this a shot. It looks like it'll be fun.
Misako with her cat, and then a Kyoko. And of course, one of them has a cute black kitty cat. And then they go to high school, and then the boyfriends get kidnapped and beat up. So they got to enact revenge. Was it Alex and what was the other one's name? River City Ransom? I forget.
No, Cliff.
Cliff. Yeah, you know, it's a thing.
It looks like it'll actually have a pretty good soundtrack. Nate Wants to Battle, Chipzel, Christina V, and Megan McDuffie. Some really good chiptune stuff in there. Limited Run will be doing a physical release. No real surprises there. And yeah, so what do I think about it? I think it looks fun. I'll give it a shot. I'm not the same guy I was 5 years ago. I can soften up on companies.
Ryan. That's one of the names. Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Ryan and Slick.
Slick.
Ryan and Ace. Ace and Tiger.
Why can't I remember the names of these
guys? I don't know,
but
Ace and Tiger is going to be the names of the characters in my beat 'em up.
Well, if they keep the RPG elements, which they They'd be stupid to get rid of.
No, it says they're going to. Six large city regions to fight through, complete with shops and side quests.
Love the animation they have in this trailer.
Yeah, it looks great.
Did they just announce a new Shantae game too?
The animation studio Trigger did the intro for the upcoming Shantae game, and the intro looks fantastic.
Yeah, the animation I don't know if it's traditional. It's fake traditional animation, but it's going to be on everything. It's going to be on Switch, PS4, Xbox One, Steam, Good Old Games, and then Humble Bundle eventually. Humble Bumble, that's another website there. All right, so here's two over-sexualized high school girls fighting to get their boyfriends back. Here's to it. All right.
It's American Dream.
It's American Dream. All right, is that it for the CU podcast?
That's it for the CU podcast. I'm going to go and watch creepy YouTube videos. That's what I was doing yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. I was watching this series, Magic World of Anya.
Okay.
Some guy in Poland made it. Very, very creepy. Lots of good music.
Okay, you want to shadow me later today or no? You have no interest?
No, I have. Well, I can watch some of it.
He starts to look. Well, really, the upload process. Okay. That's what. But that's later today. Or if you want to do a Google Hangout, we do it. Anyway,
that's fine. We can do a Google Hangout.
We can do that. Ian hates me. Ian hates learning stuff. Anyway, we're going to be at Long Island Retro Gaming Expo August 10th and 11th.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm going to go buy some succulents about an hour.
Succulents?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm going to make a garden.
That's at expo.liretro.com. Should I hire you for Castle Country's Dryscape? No?
Nope.
I will be... So at the show, besides Ian and I... You're going to have some other cool guests. Why can't I hit the guests? Oh, there it is. Guest speakers.
You'll have Frank Cifoldi. You'll have Vinny from Vine Sauce, I think it said.
Leonard Herman, our pal Leonard Herman.
I love you, Leonard.
My Life in Gaming, folks. The Retronauts. And more.
Oh, that's right. I get to see Corey.
You get to see good old Corey there. And then I will also be at the Missouri Game Con the week before. And that is on August 2nd?
It's this weekend. You're supposed to be on a plane right now.
I've had a dream like that before, actually. I've had that dream.
I have too. You wake up, your stomach hurts when you wake up from those. You're like, oh man, all the tension.
August 3rd, go to mogamecon.com. That's in Missouri. It's about 20 minutes outside of St. Louis. You're going to have Norm the Gaming Historian.
This is where? At MO?
At MO GameCon. He's going to be driving. Then you have me with that. I look really bad in that picture there. Walter Day. Jay Hatfield will be there. And more. You'll see the Nintendo PlayStation there. And then Adam Korlick will be there. I just saw Adam. He was at Too Many Games.
Oh, the Nintendo PlayStation will be there?
Yeah. You want to see it.
Cool.
Sample it. Yeah. So, and again, we'll be at Comic-Con hanging out. Come on and say hi. Come out and see the AVGN panel. 5 p.m. on Saturday. Ian, you going to show up with Frank, maybe?
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
You hate James. You heard it first. Ian hates James.
I don't hate James.
You might be too busy doing something else on a Saturday at 5 p.m.
I don't know. I might be eating food.
You can eat food afterwards, Ian. That's sick. We can all go out to eat together.
Where is it? It's at
now,
the library,
now who's,
right?
Who's the one being an antisocial hermit? It's at the library, actually, downtown.
Got it.
Yes, down the street there. They're really expanding out with the panels and going to the library because I don't remember that happening before.
Neither do I.
There. But anyway. And of course, a certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebook for sale as well. And then other than that, I'm going to be retiring in a month and a half. No, I'm kidding. I'll be doing a sabbatical hopefully in September. All right. That's Ian Ferguson.
Bye.
I'm Pat Country. Time for our Flex Pro meal. We'll see you later.